From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Coming up, help yourself get a job or a better job by writing a better resume. But we start today's show with a regular roundup of local news and lifestyle with the Sacramento Press. Joining us is Editor-in-Chief David Watts Barton. He's made it back onto the grid from Burning Man. David, welcome back.
Thanks.
Well, before we get into the actual news, how was Burning Man?
Burning Man was amazing. I'm a little hoarse now from having breathed dust and smoke for a few days, but it was beautiful, great conditions, amazing art. It was the most fun I've ever had at Burning Man in 12 years.
12 years. Yeah. And I read in the paper that there were actually more people there than the permit allowed. Was that obvious to you?
No, not at all. In fact, I just heard that myself, and that was news to me. It's such a big place. It's a huge, huge place. And so you don't notice that many people. It didn't seem overcrowded to me at all. But there were a lot of people there, and there was a lot of art, amazing art. They had a giant Trojan horse that 400 people got together and dragged out onto the playa on these enormous wheels, and then they set it on fire with flaming arrows.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was incredible. It was really something else, as always.
Yes. Well, there could be flaming arrows coming soon when the news about the financing plan for the arena comes out, which is expected in just a few days' time. What do we know at this point about this putative financing plan?
We don't really know that much about it. It's been sort of let out in dribs and drabs. There have been, you know, different little bits come out about different ways of financing. They've talked about user fees. They've talked about ticket surcharges. They've talked about adding charges to parking in downtown garages. Getting private backing from different financing, but we won't really know until Thursday whether it all comes together. And you know, some of us are a little bit doubtful about whether we'll actually know on Thursday, because last time we were told this was going to come out, it didn't come out. So the devil has been in the details of the money specifically, and that is still a big question mark.
When you were away at Burning Man, there was a guy called Tom Murphy in town who's a former mayor of Pittsburgh. He was a very successful mayor, and they built, even though Pittsburgh was depressed at the time, they successfully built, without raising taxes, two big sports facilities. And mm-hmm. he was in town, brought to town in part to talk about that, and he was an insight. He was a great guest, but it was interesting for me to read the next day that not a single member of the city council was at his meeting, even though he was speaking at the city hall, council chambers and so on. So I guess they feel like they got a handle on the matter.
I hope they do. I'm not convinced. And there are questions. There was a big article in The Nation a couple of weeks ago about this financing of public facilities and arenas particularly, and how much it actually does help cities. And I think that is something that still needs to be looked at a little bit more carefully. We all love the idea of an arena, but we're also in a very tough economic climate. And we don't really know how much this is going to help.
Yes. My guest is David Watts Barton, Editor-in-Chief of the Sacramento Press. He joins us each Tuesday. We talk about local news stories, most of which are featured on the Sacramento Press website. Well, the chicken story that's been bubbling around for several years now since the last mayoral election seems to finally come to a head and made some progress at city council. What's happened?
Yeah, I love the story because it's from the sublime to the ridiculous. I mean,
yes.
Compared to the arena and some of these big things that we're dealing with, this is sort of where the rubber meets the road as far as being a local government and city council. They finally, after 2 years of discussion, passed the ordinance allowing people to have as many as three hens in their backyard. And they have, you know, a lot of restrictions on it, but the idea is that people ought to be allowed to raise chickens for the eggs in their backyard. This is not, you know, they're not going to be slaughtering chickens. There will be no roosters allowed, so they won't be crowing at 4 o'clock in the morning. And there are still some people who opposed it, but not too many. I mean, most of the people who spoke, I said spuck because the organization that was fighting for it was the Campaign for the Legalization of Chicken Keeping, or CLUK, which I think is one of the all-time great acronyms. But they did pass it, and they're going to reevaluate it in 6 months and see. But this is something a lot of people have been for. It's worked real well in other cities, and it passed 8-0 with one member not in attendance.
And my understanding is there's a bit of a black market in hens in Sacramento. There are actually hundreds of fugitive hens hiding in backyards, but they can speak their name soon.
Right. Yes. It's like, come out wherever you are. I think it'll be nice. And, you know, I mean, there is some. I talked to a city council member a few months ago about this, and she said, you know, the problem is that the chickens get out and animal control has to go, and it costs money. So they are charging, $10 per household to get a license, and then $15 a year after that to keep chickens. The idea being that the money that is raised will go to finance, you know, taking care of problems that occur between neighbors or chickens getting out, things like that.
And some people do worry about the noise of the hens, but for the most part, they don't make a lot of noise. It's the roosters that are more vocal. You know, just as it happened, the day after the city council passed this ordinance, I was by the American River Parkway at the part where you enter near Arden and Fair Oaks, and I heard this rooster crowing. So this is an unincorporated area. I don't know if you're allowed to have roosters there, but it's a very residential-looking neighborhood, albeit not in the city. But I could imagine that could get a bit old after a while.
Yeah, my understanding is that it is allowed in an unincorporated area, and this is the city. This is a city limits thing.
Yeah. My guest is David Watts Barton. Another story that's been going on for a long time, and you would have thought would have been concluded by now, but still seems to have legs, is the redistricting in the city of Sacramento.
Yeah, I mean, tonight, city council meeting is supposed to be the final vote on this, but, you know, there's still a lot of dissension about it, particularly around Oak Park and the moving of the UC Davis Med Center from one district to another, from District 5 to District 3. There's a lot of upset about that. There was a march last week over that, protesting it, and we'll see how that goes. I mean, they seem to have arrived at some sort of compromise, but it's somewhat far from the all the maps that were submitted by citizens. And this is, you know, we've talked about this before, that there were maps submitted by city council members, and the city council got together and we said, yeah, we like this map, but there's still quite a bit of disagreement.
Yeah, it seems like there with on the city council, more or less a consensus, at least among a majority, in favor of one set of maps. But Councilman Jay Chenier wrote an op-ed in the Bee just the other day complaining about the Med Center issue. But also, there are people in the Oak Park neighborhood who are talking about next year's election.
Yeah, this is the latest development. I'm just, as I was gone for more than a week, I'm just catching up on this as well. But yeah, there are people who are starting to sort of bring next year's election into this, and that's democracy. That's the way it works. There are also some people who are talking about redoing this for the next redistricting, which will happen in 2020-2021, where they'll take it out of the city council's hands, because there is a conflict of interest of city council members sort of divvying up their areas. A case in point being the rail yards, which has suddenly ended up in District 3, which is essentially East Sacramento. So the East Sacramento district sort of swoops out across north of the central city and incorporates the rail yards because Councilman Steve Cohn is interested in the rail yards, which is, you know, I'm glad he is, but it does take the rail yards area out of downtown, which is adjacent to the rail yard, to downtown and the central city, which has been combined. This is the sort of overlooked story in a lot of this, is that the central city has been changed from being parts of three different districts to being one district on its own. And so, but in doing that, they've also removed the rail yards from downtown, which anybody who's been there realizes the rail yard starts at 5th and I Street.
Yes.
Or 5th and H, it's right there.
I mean, right now it looks for the most part like wasteland, but if and when it's developed, it will clearly look like part of downtown Sacramento.
Yeah, and there are no voters there now because it's just a big empty, you know, dug up area. But as it becomes developed, and, you know, that's obviously the interest in it, is going to be developed. It's going to be a large tax base. It's going to be a very, very important part of town. But for an awful lot of us, including myself, I live in Alkali Flat, which is right there. We're going to be impacted by what happens in the rail yard. But our city council member is not going to represent the rail yards. It's going to be represented by whoever is out in East Sac. And as someone on the redistricting committee said to me, you have to divorce it from the personalities. You have to look at it geographically and not who has it, because who has those districts is going to change. But the shape of the districts is going to stay the same. And having the rail yards not be a part of the central city when it is going to have the most impact on the central city is strange, and it reflects on the process.
Mm. David Watts Barton is editor-in-chief of the Sacramento Press. There have been a whole bunch of restaurants, coffee shops, bars have closed over the last couple of years in Sacramento. One that closed was Le Petit Paris in Midtown, but another business has opened up there, and it's also food-related.
Yes, a gelateria has just opened up, and who knew we needed another one? But apparently, this one is all homemade or made there. She makes her own base and then puts all the flavors into it. And the people who've been there, I'm not one of them yet because it opened while I was gone, but I definitely go check it out. And you can't go wrong with gelato. And it's great to see new businesses opening. There was a story in the Bee the other day, or today actually, about the Sacramento ranks 35th out of 35 cities in terms of small business failures. And that's not good. So every time we see somebody open up, it's a good thing. We saw Bar West open a couple weeks ago over on the 2800 block of J. People are still opening businesses, and it amazes me. It's a very bold move in this environment.
Some well-established and well-known restaurants have got involved in the low end of the food business, recycling kitchen scraps into compost. Why are places like Mulvaney's and the Waterboy involved in that?
Well, you know, they produce, a lot of these restaurants produce, in the story we had, to produce 250 to 500 pounds of organic waste a week. And rather than just throwing that into the landfill and letting it rot there, it can be composted. And so this organization, which is the Green Restaurant Alliance of Sacramento, and it involves a lot of the best restaurants in town, Hot
yeah,
Italian.
It's a pretty impressive list.
Yeah, Mulvaney's, Hot Italian, Sellin's Market Cafe, One Speed, Grange, Ella. These are the top restaurants in town.
I wouldn't mind the scraps myself.
So they're going to pull them together, compost them. A lot of their produce is organic produce, and it comes from a place in West Sacramento. And so what they're doing is they're gathering it all together and putting it back in West Sac. And this has been going on for a while, but we had a real nice photo essay on it that one of our interns did.
And finally, a landmark for the Sacramento Press last week.
Yeah, this was great. This was great to come home to. We published our 10,000th article last week, which is in 3 years is a pretty good record, and that's written by more than 1,000 people, most of whom are members of the community. And as it was pointed out, Ben Ilfeld, one of the owners of the company, wrote a little essay about it and said, you know, a lot of it is sort of, you know, some of it is wrong. Some of it is not as good as it could be. It's been written by the community. It's some of it's amateur, some of it's pro. But the fact of the matter is we published 10,000 stories about Sacramento in the last 3 years, about local Sacramento. And so we're very excited about that.
And we talk about some of the stories each Tuesday on Insight. David Watts Barton, Editor-in-Chief of the Sacramento Press, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to Insight. When we come back, help yourself get a job or a better job by writing a better resume. Two experts join us with tips. Listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Our show's on the radio. We're also online. Joining us with details about what is online is Insight's Jen Picard. Hi, Jen.
Hi, good morning. Well, you're about to talk with two experts about tips for job seekers on how to write successful cover letters and resumes. And we'd like to know if our listeners actually have any suggestions on things to avoid when it comes to looking for a job in today's market. Or perhaps any examples of super successful cover letters they just know got them that coveted job. You can comment on our Facebook page, Insight at Capital Public Radio, or email us at insight@capradio.org. You can also see examples of well-written cover letters and resumes, as well as get 10 tips for interviewing on our webpage, www.capradio.org/insight. And tomorrow we're going to be talking with Pearls Before Swine comic creator Stefan Pastis about his work, and we'd like to know what your favorite comic is and why. Again, you can email us, that's insight@capradio.org, or go to our Facebook page, Insight at Capital Public Radio, to leave a comment.
I like Dilbert.
Oh, nice.
Thanks, Jen.
You're welcome.
Well, as Jen just mentioned, we're going to talk now about helping you find a job or a better job. Tens of millions of Americans are unemployed or underemployed or tenuously employed. So this is a great time to sharpen your job finding skills, in particular that key tool, the resume. But writing your resume is no simple matter. How do you decide what goes in and what stays out? Should you write your resume in chronological order or group your work by theme? And what are those resume no-nos that recruiters grimace over when they see them time and time again? Joining us with information about all of this are two people who see a lot of resumes. Julie Collier is a career counselor at Sacramento State, and Jeff Brzozowski is a talent acquisition manager for university relations at Travelers Insurance, Inc. Julie, Jeff, welcome to Insight.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Good morning.
Well, how important is the resume as opposed to all the other tools that people can bring to bear when it comes to finding a job? Julie?
You know, the resume is really important because it's going to screen you into the process or it's going to screen you out. However, you can't minimize the importance of networking and of your performance in the interview and your skills and qualifications.
Yes. And Jeff, as someone who works in the private sector, what's your perspective on this? How important is the resume compared to everything else?
It's quite important. I think Julie's point is well taken. It is a screening in process for many employers. They look at certain skills they're looking for. They're looking for how the resume is formatted and looking for things such as lack of spelling errors and grammar mistakes. So it's a first introduction to the candidate. And it's often something that a lot of people will say they only look at for maybe 15, 20 seconds, and then they'll make a judgment, and they move on. So it's quite important to get the resume right.
Well, Julie, if someone only looks at a resume for 15 seconds, they can't really digest in fine detail everything that's in it. What are people looking for typically as they scan it? Spelling mistakes, but anything else?
Absolutely. So if I'm an employer and I have a job announcement and I'm recruiting for a specific position, I'm going to want to, right at the top, if in the top half of that resume, I'm going to want to see matching skills and qualifications that match the skills and qualifications in the job description. So I'm going to want to know, does this person have the skills and the minimum qualifications?
Jeff, as regards that, making sure that your resume includes the skills and qualifications that are required in the job ad or whatever, for disclosure, I've been involved in hiring many people over the years in various settings. And I always wonder a little bit when I see resumes that just look a little too copied and pasted from the job ad. I mean, yes, you want to see some sort of match between the job and the skills, but at the same time, I want to feel like this person wrote it as opposed to just copying and pasting.
And I have seen resumes where it's evident the person just copied and pasted their current job description into their resume.
Oh.
And that would be a no-no because that shows no ability to really articulate what you've accomplished individually, because obviously you're required to do a certain thing in your current role. But if you're just copying and pasting information, yes, you want to avoid the appearance of it being just a boilerplate resume.
Yeah. How important is the name of the company and the correct spelling of the company when it comes to the resume? Is that the kind of thing that employers look for?
Yes, you should make sure that all of the information on your resume is accurate and spelled correctly. You want to avoid things such as making sure your objective or your cover letter is not addressed to the wrong person. Oftentimes when you're doing a job search, you're writing these for many different companies and you might mistakenly send out the wrong letter or resume. And that's an immediate indication that you didn't pay enough attention to some detail.
What if someone was interested in applying to work for Travelers Insurance and they misspelled the word Travelers, you know, like there are two L's or something like that? Let's just say otherwise the resume was good. What impact would that have on the way you see that candidate?
It's not a good impact. That shows lack of attention to detail. With spell check and the tools able to, you know, catch something like that, that should be avoided really at all costs. When you think about hundreds of resumes coming in, you know, and you're only hiring one candidate, a mistake like that could make the difference, and it's really very avoidable.
Julie, a lot of people rely on spell checkers for this kind of thing, but as anyone who's used Microsoft Word knows, quote-unquote typos can be corrected that were actually correct in the first place, or the wrong correction can be made. Obviously, the spell checker is like a first line of attack, but what else would you suggest people do to make sure the resume is correctly spelled?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would highly recommend, right off the top of my head, get at least three people to proofread your resume.
At least three.
And don't just assume that Microsoft Office is going to correct your, you know, on your spell check. Absolutely, yeah.
That's Julie Collier. She's a career counselor at Sacramento State. Jeff Brzozowski is a talent acquisition manager at Travelers Insurance. We're talking about resumes, how to write them. There are two main kinds of resumes as far as I can see, there's the kind that's chronological that lists your jobs in order, chronological order. And then there's another kind where things are grouped together in themes of one kind or another. Julie, why would you choose one over the other?
So there's the chronological, and then I think what you're talking about related to themes would be the functional or skills resume. So the chronological is going to be the first choice in most cases. It's the most widely accepted, and it shows your work history in a reverse chronological order. And in that way, an employer can easily see a logical progression of your work history, and that's what they want to see. They're looking for that logical progression without gaps.
So why would you not write it that way?
So the reason you wouldn't write it that way is if you were a new job seeker with limited experience, say, for example, a new college grad that doesn't have a lot of experience in the field that you want to go into, but you want to show that you have done projects and that you have skills maybe related to your academic work that you can group according to skill areas. So then you would highlight in the middle section your like three or four main skill areas with accomplishments from either paid or unpaid work underneath each skill area. Another reason, Jeffrey, would be someone that's been out of the workforce for a while, like someone that's raised children and coming back into the workforce.
Well, Jeff, it sounds like people use these more functional resumes because of a perceived issue, either because they're just entering the workforce, maybe, or they've been in the workforce for a long time, and they don't want to have this endless list of things going back to the 50s. Also, people who've got long, big gaps in their resume. Does that mean that it's a bit of a red flag for recruiters when they see that kind of resume?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think it depends on the recruiter. This is an industry or you get a lot of different opinions on what is the right resume to write. I see a lot of reverse chronological order resumes, even for students that have limited work history, and I think they can be functional and they can work just fine. I think they're because of the most commonly accepted format, the other functions sort of throw recruiters or managers off a little bit because they're used to seeing a certain format, and that might be why they might initially have a reaction to that format. So I think it's best almost in all cases to stick with that format.
Well, but then what if you are one of those kinds of people that Julie just referred to, like someone who's just entering the workforce and really doesn't have any significant work experience?
Yeah, and like I said, I deal with college students primarily who do have limited work history, and they might have, you know, part-time jobs, maybe some internships. And I think there is a way to still do a resume that looks, you know, reverse chronological, even though you have limited work history, and still be successful.
And Julie, what about people who've got a big gap in their work history? And there are various reasons why people can have a big gap in their work history. What if you want to write a reverse chronological order resume, but you've got this big gap of several years? What do you do with that?
Well, it depends on how much related experience you had, maybe back when you were in the workforce. But I would recommend to stay away from dates, and if possible, to draw upon more recent experiences, say volunteer experience or experience in academic areas. If they're, you know, someone that's a non-traditional reentry student that's, you know, studying accounting, for example, draw upon the unpaid experiences. And if there is something related in the very, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, possibly put that down. But if you're going to put dates, you don't want to put those really, you want to kind of hide them or you want to leave them out.
Well, Jeff, if you were unemployed for 2 years and you're doing a reverse chronological order resume, what should you write? What would you recommend you put into those 2 years?
Well, I've never been asked that question. So if I were to do it, I would not necessarily address it in the resume. I would just leave the gap. I think a lot of people have faced unemployment in the last 2 or 3 years for reasons that are beyond their control, obviously. I think a lot of people understand that. The market's been very difficult. And so you can choose to address it as just, you know, you can put a line in there to say, you know, seeking employment. But a lot of employers or recruiters will interpret that gap as probably meaning some sort of gap, either for a job-seeking reason or you're simply unemployed.
Should you address that in the cover letter?
I think that's a good place to address it. Again, a lot of resumes are going to have that these days. So I think there's no format to really address that. It's kind of your choice on how you would wish to do it.
Julie, what about someone who's got, to be frank, a flaky job history? What would you recommend they do?
That's a very good question. Again, you don't want to put a lot of irrelevant information on the resume. In that case, I wouldn't put anything on the resume that you did for less than 2 months, unless it's just extremely significant and related to the position that you're going for. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes.
So I would really highlight, in that case, I'd really want to see like a skills area at the top where they're listing competencies or skills right on the top half of the resume, say underneath their education. And then pick one or two things that they did that were, you know, maybe 3 to 6 months at least. And then that's, and then maybe leave the things off if they, you know, worked for two weeks somewhere. You don't want to put that on the resume.
Well, what about the skills, that summary of skills at the top that you often see in resumes, and also the objective that you often see at the top of resumes? Jeff, what do you think about those?
I think skills are appropriate when they're specialized skills, and they should be not used for things such as team player, energetic, that I often see in that section, limited to things that are more specific to either, you know, technical skills or things of that nature. And if you have a very solid, well-crafted objective that makes sense for you, it's very appropriate to put that. Some people will advise people not to put an objective. If you don't have one and you're open to different types of employment, then don't put an objective. But if you have one, definitely put one in.
Well, Julie, what kind of objective makes sense? I mean, I've seen objectives for people applying for jobs here that say, my objective is to be a reporter at Capital Public Radio. Well, duh, that's why you're applying. So why bother? But then conversely, you can get these grandiose objectives that are really, you know, solve world hunger or something.
Exactly. I think the first example that you used, to be a reporter at Capital Public Radio, a one line, very specific objective, is actually more desirable. And you don't want to do these grandiose, multiple sentence objectives that really talk about, you know, how I'm seeking a place where I can grow as a professional and get experience. I mean, what you really want to do is focus on what you can do for the employer and not what the employer is going to give you.
Now, before we started this discussion, Jen Picard said that we posted some sample resumes. I believe we got them from your office, Julie, on our webpage, so people can look at them. And one of them, this is a fictional resume. It's Mary L. Student. So when you look for it, that's the one you'll see. When I look at it, it's very clean and professional looking. But some people would say that's such a boring looking resume. What would you say to people who worry about their resume looking, quote unquote, boring?
Great thing to discuss. At the Career Center at Sac State, we use this as an example, this Mary L. Student resume, because it's capturing the key information. You know, it has the objective, it's got the education, it's got the skills, and I'm not looking right at it right now, but yeah. But you want your resume to screen you into the process, and you really don't want it to have anything. You really want it to sort of fit the formula and just hit the main. You want good formatting, good content, and relatively sticking to that chronological order, or if you're adding a functional piece too. You really don't want your resume to have the wrong information, or you don't want it to be too flashy. And depending on the industry, you want to keep it kind of boring, because you don't want it to stand out for the wrong reasons.
Jeff, one page or not for the resume?
In most cases, one page should suffice for a resume. In some limited situations where you're talking about individuals who are very experienced, I've seen people that are in the PhD world, scientific world, where they're attaching a lot of different things. That's where I think more than one page is appropriate. For most job seekers, undergraduate students to professionals like myself where I have 20 years of experience, I would go with a one-page resume.
Yeah. And finally, Julie, a question that troubles a lot of people. This is more about the cover letter. Who do you address the cover letter to if there's no name given in the ad?
Exactly. What I would do, and the way I was trained, is to actually leave the salutation off if you do not have a real person.
So no dear, such and
right.
Such.
Just go right from your the address content to the first paragraph of the cover letter.
And Jeff, how does that sound to you?
That sounds fine. You could also address it to Travelers, Human Resources, something of, you know, generic in that sense as well. Yeah. And then both would be appropriate.
Okay. Well, thanks so much. We've been talking about resumes and a little bit about cover letters. Julie Collier is a career counselor at Sacramento State. Jeff Brazowski is a talent acquisition manager at Travelers Insurance, Inc. He works with students who are moving into the workplace. And as we said, we've posted on our website, capradio.org/insight, more information about this, including some sample resumes that are really hot to trot. Julie and Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Insight. When we come back, three generations of Sacramento musicians come together for a special concert. You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Callison. What's in the news today? Joining us with details is Alan Ray, Capital Public Radio senior editor. He's in our newsroom. Alan, what's in the news?
Well, Amazon.com, Jeffrey, has offered a deal to provide what it says are thousands of new jobs if the state of California will back away from a budget plan that would force Amazon to collect sales tax in the state. Assembly Speaker John Perez is addressing that right now. Capital Public Radio Bureau Chief Marianne Russ will be covering it. We'll have the story this afternoon.
Well, that's a vexing political question, I guess, for the governor and the lawmakers, because you got jobs and you got tax revenue.
Well, and you also have Amazon out there basically putting together a signature drive for a referendum that would overturn the whole thing. And having already spent $5 million or so on this, you know, Amazon's got a big dog in this hunt, too. So this is going to be a really it'll be very interesting to see what Mr. Perez has to say as he talks this morning.
Yeah.
The Davis City Council will meet tonight and vote on what could be a doubling of city water rates, and nobody, you can imagine, is happy about that. The city is on well water right now. That's high in minerals. The hope is to get Davis from well water to city of Sacramento River water. That will mean new infrastructure and treatments, and that all costs money.
And national news?
Well, President Obama's new ratings seem to show a triumph of experience over hope, you'll pardon the expression. More than 60% of the people surveyed say they disapprove of the way the president is handling the economy and what has become the number one issue, the stagnant job situation. Only 43% now approve of the job he's doing. Those stories and more on All Things Considered beginning at 3:30 this afternoon on Capital Public Radio.
Alan Ray, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Well, back to today's show. Three generations of Sacramento musicians are coming together this week for a special concert. They'll be at Fairytale Town tomorrow evening in Sacramento. The musicians are Sal Valentino and also Hans Eberbach and Alex Nelson. We'll talk with Hans and Alex a little bit later on, but we start with Sal Valentino. He's been in our show before. He started out in the business in the 60s as the singer in the band The Bo Brummels. He's back in the music business, and he's in our studio. Sal, welcome back to Insight.
You're like Dick Clark now. You remember everything. Thank you. It's good to be back here.
Yeah.
But one thing, I'm not a musician. I'm a singer.
Oh, okay. Well, some singers like to think.
You got
to
be careful then in this town, especially if you have a guitar.
Okay, I'll correct my script.
It'll kill you. No, you're right. They're wrong.
And the man behind the concert is Marty DeAnda, who is a music producer and owner and co-founder of Dig Music, and he's a manager of some musicians, too. Marty, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be back.
What's the idea behind the show?
The idea behind the show happened about 6 or 7 months ago. I was Kevin Johnson, Mayor Kevin Johnson, had showed up for a Jackie Greene show. He's a fan of Jack's as well. And we were chatting about the concept and his desire to keep Sacramento musicians local and to keep the focus on Sacramento musicians and to make them want to stay here. And I was just chewing on ideas. One day it came to me, let's put together a string of generations of singers so that we could really show Sacramento how deep the musical pool is here. It came together, and now we're getting a lot of pressure for an all-female one. So it's kind of a fun concept.
And how did you come up with the trio of Sal, Hans, and Alex?
Well, first of all, they're all friends of mine and all people who I respect. They're also people that can work really well together and have in some capacity, worked together. And I thought this would be a great way to launch it with people who are very well respected themselves and also can work together. Kind of shows the unity thing, if you will.
Well, Sal, when Marty talks about three generations, I guess you're at the upper end of the generations.
I guess I am. I've just realized that I'm 5 years younger than Golden Gate Bridge.
Really?
Yes. On my birthday, I'll be 5 years younger than the Golden Gate Bridge. I lived around the Golden Gate Bridge all my life. I never thought about it. Now here I am.
Marty told us beforehand this is also kind of a birthday concert for you. Is that right? When is or will be
my
birthday?
My birthday's Wednesday.
Oh,
the
8th,
yeah. Oh, it's the 8th, yeah. Thursday. No, it's Thursday. Yeah. See, I don't even know what day it is.
It's Thursday, Sal.
Marty just drags me around, you know. Bring your guitar.
So Sal's birthday is on the 8th, but the concert is going to be on the 7th. Sal, you did sort of indirectly say how old you are relative to the Golden Gate Bridge. But for those of us who don't know how old the Golden Gate Bridge is.
Going to be 75.
Okay, well, subtract
74.
Subtract
yeah, 8 I'm 69 from it. In a couple of days.
Wow, well, you're looking good and doing good.
I don't know how I got here, you know. But I'm glad to have met you. I'm glad that I met you. There's a lot of other things I could have done without. But
now, you released an album a couple of years ago. But as I said, back in the day, you were with the band The Bo Brummels. And one of the band's Records has been reissued, a record called Bradley's Barn. We'll talk about that in a moment, but let's listen to one of the songs from that reissued album. This is Turnaround. Let's turn around the first song on Bradley's Barn, a reissued album by the Beau Brummels. Sal, when I think of the Beau Brummels, I think of a more classic 60s pop, sort of psychedelic sound. Not country rock, but this is clearly a country rock album. How did that happen?
You know, a lot of people ask me about that and think that, you know, we're influenced. We're influenced by the same thing that influenced Gram Parsons and them guys and the Birds. I know it all seemed to happen at the same time. Ron Elliott was the only guy I met. I knew in North Beach that liked country and western music too, or was familiar with it and could play it. Why, you didn't live in North Beach.
You know. He's looking at Marty. No.
I did not.
Marty's favorite song is Sad Little Girl. Yeah. One of mine, too. I thought it was a hit. But anyway, I grew up liking country and western music. I don't know exactly why. And I ran into Ron Elliott. He was the best guitar player I ever met. I was 16. He was 14. And he liked writing, and I loved singing. And so that's how it went. And he wanted to go to Lenny had always wanted to go. Lenny Warnke was the producer. He'd wanted to go to Nashville to record us because he was a little frustrated. We weren't having the kind of success he wanted to have with us. And so he called Owen Bradley, and Owen Bradley put together the band, Jerry Reed of Wayne Moss, Norbert Putnam, Kenny Buttrey was a drummer. Harold Bradley was one of the guitar players also.
Is that Bradley as in Bradley's Barn?
Yes. Yeah, it was Owen's studio, yes.
So Bradley's Barn was the name of the studio where you recorded it?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Owen Bradley's the guy that did Patsy Cline. He did Brenda Lee. He did an album or two with Katie Lang.
I heard Buddy Holly recorded there too. Is that right?
You know, he might have. Yeah, George Jones did an album there too. I saw one recently, yeah.
Wow.
But
what a place to work at.
It was good. Oh, yeah, it was great. The guys on the breaks, they would go out fishing. You know, coming out of Hollywood. In Hollywood, the guys would go and call their service or something, you know, go to have a cocktail or something. These guys go fishing.
My guest is Sal Valentino. He's singing at a concert with two other singers at Fairytale Town tomorrow night in Sacramento. He was also a member of the Beau Brummels, and their record Bradley's Barn is being reissued. Let's listen to a clip from one other song from that album. This is Deep Water.
Here they're so often the things I need never seem to be around. Here they're so often I pick up speed, trouble isn't going down. And I'm in deep water, wishing like a kid again, back in that deep water. I want somebody to come on down to my life and love me.
Sal, do you sing any of these songs from Bradley's Barn nowadays?
Turn Around, I'll be doing a couple nights. I do Turn Around quite a bit. I do Little Bird. Deep Water, I did for a while. Cherokee Girl, I'd love to do. Someone wants to do a tour doing the Bradley's Barn songs, and maybe include the album after that, too, with Brummels. But a lot of good songs there, but we'll see. I like doing them. You know, there's so many of them that I liked that we never got to play for anybody. And as it turns out, not so many people heard them either. I'm glad Rhino likes them.
Yeah, Rhino Records is the company that re-released Bradley's Barn this summer by the Beau Brummels. Their singer is Sal Valentino. He's in our studio along with music producer Marty DeAnda. We're talking about a concert that's happening tomorrow night in Sacramento at Fairytale Town. Also in that concert are singers Hans Eberbach and Alex Nelson. And when we come back, they will join us.
Trouble isn't going down, and I'm in deep water.
This is Insight from Capital Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Callison. We're playing Good Day Sunshine because it's such a sunny day. Sunny and hot today in the valleys. 97 today in Sacramento, 95 in Stockton, up in the foothills in Nevada City, Grass Valley. 97 too, and 91 in Sonora. If you're up in Reno, it's 88 today in Tahoe City, 78 degrees. That's what it's looking like. Sunny and hot again tomorrow. Cooler over the weekend. Certainly not a whole lot cooler if you're way down in Rio de Janeiro, where it's going to be 84 degrees today and sunny. Well, that's your weather forecast. Back to what's going on in our studio. Sal Valentino, the singer, he's playing tomorrow night at Fairytale Town in Sacramento. And joining him on the stage are two other singers, both of whom have also been on our show before, Hans Eberbach and Alex Nelson. Hans, Alex, welcome back to Inside.
Hello.
That's Hans.
How you doing?
And that's Alex.
Thanks for having us.
Hans, what did you think when Marty DeAnda said, hey, let's do a show with you and Alex and Sal?
I thought, thanks for calling me.
It's nice to be a part of this. At Fairytale
Town. That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Where dreams are made of.
Hans, have you sung with Sal before?
Yes.
Yeah, we sat in a couple.
What was that song, that Creedence song?
Yep.
To turn out the light.
We did some early Maryland shows when I was doing Looking Star, I think, back,
the early 2000s.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Back in the day, I guess.
Yeah.
And what about you, Alex? I believe you have sung with Sal before.
Sal's been kind enough to actually let my band open up for him several times. Once at the Palms in Winters, which is most notably, it's like one of our favorite shows we've ever played. And he's sat in with the band, shown us how to rock a few tunes.
Alex, show me how to put up posters. I never put up posters before.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was a fun experience.
What do you mean?
For that show in Winters, you know, I was, Marty helped me put together some posters, you know, and I called up Sal. I said, hey, Sal, you know, you want to drive out with me and Chris, the keyboard player in Walking Spanish? And I said, you want to drive out to Winters with us and help us? We'll do some poster. And he says, you know, well, what do you mean?
Don't you have people to do that?
Yeah, Marty, exactly.
Marty, isn't it? Is it illegal to put up posters like that?
No, it's legal, but I'm a little bit lazy, so I kind of redelegated the opportunity to these
Since
gentlemen.
Since I came to Sacramento, it's taken me 5 years to remember to put the CDs in the car.
Oh.
Another 2 years to take them out of the car.
All melted.
I mean, I didn't know, you know, none of that stuff is even a topic of conversation.
Well, the guys are going to sing in our studio in just a moment, but we do actually have a clip of Sal Valentino singing with Walking Spanish. This is Isis.
Yeah, I married Isis on the fifth day of May, but I could not hold on to her for very long. So I cut off my hair and I rode straight away for the wild unknown country where I could not go wrong. Dutch abiding line ran through the center of town. I pitched up my pony to a post on the right, went into a laundry, washed my clothes down. A man in the corner approached me.
I just love that. And while we were listening to the song, the guys in the studio were trying to figure out where it was recorded. Alex, did you decide where?
Sal, you said it was somewhere up in
El Dorado Hills.
Oh, El Dorado Hills.
That place, yeah, that you played on every once in a while. You know where Tom and his band played there.
Oh yeah.
The place.
I think so. Sal has sat in with us, you know, around. I think.
We were talking about it too.
It might have been in the park. Yeah, a little concert in the park up in El Dorado Hills.
Well, it sounds good. We got that from the MySpace. Sal's MySpace page.
You gotta watch out these days. Your telephone will bust you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I had no idea that recording was in existence.
You used to have to tap the phones. Now it's just
that's cool.
All built in.
Well, we're gonna hear a song now live in our studio. And Sal, what is the song called?
This is called One Promise Too Late.
And Sal is playing his guitar and he's going to be singing, and Alex has his guitar and Hans is going to be singing, and here they are in our studio. So let's go.
I could have waited forever. If I'd known you'd be here, get our lives together, held on to each other. All through the years, how about I met someone before you? And my heart just couldn't wait I adore you. I've got to stand behind promises I made. Where were you when I could have loved you? But I never will forget you. Where were you when I could have loved you?
Singing love.
Where were you when I gave my heart away? Oh, my life, darling, I've been dreaming of you. You came along, one promise to me. Yeah, where were you?
Wow, that was absolutely tremendous. That was One Promise Too Late live in our studio. Sal Valentino singing with Hans Eberbach, and the guitarists were Sal and Alex Nelson. Hans, the concert tomorrow night, are you all going to be singing together as like a trio? Or are you going to do separate sets, or have you even figured it out yet?
It's three separate sets. Alex is starting off at 6 to 6:30, right?
Young and first.
Yeah,
young and first.
Increasing in age.
To separate schools together, you know?
Yeah.
It's actually nice singing, Hans.
Yes.
6:30 to 7.
And then Sal.
Sal is going to...
Marty, what time does it start? It
starts at 6 o'clock. Doors are at 5, or gates at 5. I guess it's Fairy Tale Town. They don't have doors.
That's at the Mother Goose stage.
Right.
And sounds good. And very briefly, Marty, you said you're going to do a female equivalent at some point?
Yes. Yeah, so I'm amazed at how much feedback we've got on this show. And I've been almost getting demands that we do an all-female cast next. And so we're going to put that together. And hopefully,
Chris Webster?
She's definitely on the list. You betcha.
You got demands from me. Yeah.
Great. Well, thanks so much. Thanks so much, Sal Valentino, Marty DeAnda, Hans Eberbach, and Alex Nelson. Thanks for joining us today on Inside.
Great to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
Right on. Thanks.
And that's Insight for today. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Today's associate producers, Lynn Weaver and Liz Cazares. The assistant producer, James Morrison. The technical director, Mark Jones. Insight's senior producer is Jen Picard. We'll be back tomorrow.
Like me.
Two bills that would change the way California writes and runs its budget are receiving bipartisan support. On the next Insight, we'll talk about them. Plus, we'll check in on local issues in the news with columnist Marcus Bertone, and Pearls Before Swine comic creator Stefan Pastis visits Sacramento. We'll talk with him about his work. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Join me for Insight.
Tomorrow morning at 10 on Capital Public Radio.